I'm in the Harris Hospital in Kushendall in the county of Antrim on the 12th day of March in the year 1967. I'm about to talk to probably one of the best known people in the village of Kushendall, Mrs. Mary Stone. I suppose everyone who visited the village made a point of calling with Mrs. Stone in her shop in Shore Street near the curfew tower. Unfortunately, she's indisposed and she's here in the hospital, and she's agreed to record some of her memoirs of Kushendall when she was a little girl and of the things that she heard from other folk about Kushendall in the years gone by. Mrs. Stone, I'm sorry to see you in hospital, but I'm very pleased to see you looking so well and in such good voice, and I would like you to tell us, if you will please, is this the first hospital building in Kushendall?
The first hospital building proper. The previous to that time, Miss Catherine took that house that she had made in an estate. It had very big rooms, and she thought it would easily fit into it.
Who did all the parcel?
Well, if you call it the beginning, that's what the minister lived in. And when the minister vacated it, he climbed up there, and she saw the chance.
There, Mrs. Stone, Miss Catherine. Now, she was one of, I think, was that four sisters? Their name was MacDonald. Now, would you tell us how they came here?
They came here because of George Stone, which is
when you were a child, Mrs. Stone, beginning to notice things, do you remember that hospital or sick building in High Street?
Certainly.
Is that now where, is that Sundial House?
No, it's Sundial House, but that's another story. But then,
to the rectory or the parsonage over in High Street where Sister Catherine MacDonald helped the poor. Where were people treated if illness befell them?
Well, it wasn't a very comfortable journey. Over 16 miles of a mountain road to the nearest hospital, which was not it's now Damriata Hospital, beautiful hospital place. But at that time it was a poor house where people were treated.
How did you get there?
By a very primitive means. There was a lady whose name intrigued us young people. Her name was Ailes McFreed. And she threw, well, I suppose the moderns wouldn't know what a black mariah was. But it was a vehicle of that time, thrown by a jennet. And Ailes, of course, she was accustomed to meeting wind and weather. She wore a very mannish garb. And she had a managed taste. She was very fond of a week. And it was told of her, I don't know whether it's true or not, but maybe it was to make a story around the fireside, that the Ailes never went on a direct journey to Ballycastle, 16 miles over the mountain. But she called for refreshment and maybe a crack. and a patient waiting outside, and she called it three well-known hospitals on the road. And of course, the time in Ballycastle.
Could you tell me what the three well-known hostelries were?
I could. The first was Johnny, we call it Johnny Joe's now. It was owned by Mrs. Berry. And she bought Mrs. Berry's first.
That's in
Milston. And then she lived on till she came to a place called the Town.
That's Barney McKay.
And that was Barney McKay's grandfather. By the way, Mackay's license has lapsed. That's not a story. And then I think the next house of call was Hunter O'Bannon. And then she drove down to the Ballycastle.
What do you think she drove, or did the Janet go on his own?
Well, it was said, because fact and fiction are very often mixed up with the tales that I heard. But I think it was horses, and I suppose Janet's too. You know what a Janet is, a sort of a hybrid between. They're supposed to have an excellent memory, an embarrassing memory. They've been known to stop at public houses and give the game away.
Could you describe the Black Maria as it was described to you?
Well, I can't think of any vehicle on the road at the present day. It used to be an old Ford, something in the same lines. You see, I'm speaking now from memory. Because Ailes was possibly dead when I was born, but she was a tradition in the Glens, and her name intrigued us.
Yeah, had it windows, this?
It had no windows.
No windows.
We'd say it had no windows.
The wheels were?
Oh, the wheels were iron shut, as all wheels were in those
shut.
Days.
And do you know, were there any bedding?
Well, I suppose, as it was, sometimes sick people were taken, and very, very rarely. What they called that certain impoverishment, and I suppose according to the degree was their comfort.
What was the bedding bill?
Well, I suppose in the case of people that didn't want to care for them, which would make a very comfortable bed, either hay or straw.
Hay or straw,
yes.
I say that the thought of this windowless wagon winding its way down into the glen with this woman sitting at the wheel, it must have been a frightening thought for the people as they saw this thing working its way down and then disappearing again in the late evening over the hill to the workhouse. This form of transportation, I understand, gave way to a better type. Can you remember who supplied that?
I don't think it was Downey's purchase gift ever come around here. I think it was for local use in Ballycastle. And in the meantime, D.C., then this is where Mrs. McDonald's charity stepped in. That was all swept away. Her sick people didn't go. They did go later on. But the bulk of the people here were treated in this hospital and took shape, D.C. We need to know dates to be correct.
The Black Maria's days.
But the Black Maria's
this Sister Catherine.
Yes,
right.
Well,
the ambulance would occasionally come over for maybe bad kisses for bad kisses.
Well, it might be
fever
I remember quite recently there was fever cases.
Yeah. Was supplied by Mrs. Michael Durkin.
It was. To her eternal credit with them.
Well, Ilse McFreegan and Sister McDonnell. Ailes McFreegan. And Sister McDonald, was there any medico here in the village at all to look after the people?
The medico, long before the hospital was built. I remember Dr. Doherty, and I remember Dr. King, you'd almost call him recent.
Well, who was the earliest you heard of?
The earliest I heard of was Dr. Doherty. Well, the earliest mention from my mother, who was a Glensman, we were living in Tyrone at the time, but the earliest mention of a doctor here was of Dr. Stone. And Dr. Stone, not alone being the medical, did another little business on the sideline. And he was popularly supposed to encourage body snatching. And that there was a thriving business done between the hospitals and Laid Graveyard.
Where did he live?
He lived where the present bank is. It was in a small house.
The Northern
Bank, beside
the
where we lived. There was no bank there.
Opposite the Dead's Mount. Yes. Can you tell me, where did the McAllisters originate?
I'll tell you that. The McAllisters were the owners of Carnhaughton. Do you know who did it first? Well, they're the ancient. But the McAllisters were all the one family who were guests, and they were in it. The McAllisters already had it in Edison. Three went into to be erupted. They thought that they were from Shadow, so they divided their farm. And it was said that each member got £10. And with that, Dan McAllister, the present Mannix McAllister's grandfather, started the business of Cushion Door, now known as the Glen's Mantra.
But I understand that they had the position of the starting society.
Yes.
Yes. And they were in the licensure on the wholesale side.
I didn't know the wholesale, but that's written and evidence.
They ship in their own spirits. Is that right?
But I think they did something illicitly too, but everybody did.
They're no longer in the license business. Do you understand that they allowed the license to lapse?
Yes,
yes.
That's only a memory.
They
had very wide interests. They immediately branched out into coal export.
Yes.
And they kept cattle and sold milk. And they also, see, that another activity too. The purchase of wool locally, and had a thriving business with the merchants. The salmon fisheries were in the open market, and they took over the salmon. But I couldn't tell you the year that they first began salmon fishing. Originally, a family called McKeegan, and it's to this day, Dal Reada, that you're familiar with, is known by the old people as McKeegan Shore.
They were the occupiers of the salmon
fishing. Of course, then there was the fact that the Murrays owned the Glenar, the Waterfoot, and so on. But the McAllisters were the exclusive owners of
the salmon.
I was reading in a book published in 1835, Lay's Irish Roads Directory, of an inn in Cushion Dall with hot sea baths. Can you tell me where the bathhouse was in Cushion Dall?
You could throw a stone from what we called the bath sea in the recent days, 30 years ago, to the Glens of Antrim Wooden. And both were the property of Mr. Turney, who had recently bought them.
Yeah, that was at the time of the publication of this book. I'm talking about
Turney. I can't remember, but you could easily find it. You have access to a lot of things, it would give you the date.
Where is the bathhouse?
The bathhouse is now owned by Mike McEnroe, and you go to a flight of steps, and there's a basement underneath, and Mike says he saw there the pipes, the hot water arrangement,
yes.
Walking from the shore here,
walking,
you know, the path that
here.
Goes to Lones,
yes.
Opposite the hotel.
That would be the first house on your left and shore street.
You have it now.
Yes.
Yes.
And what was the idea of the sea bath?
They were known as, I suppose, on the principle of bath in England, you know. I suppose that was the idea.
What benefits supposed to
accrue? Oh, they were supposed to be a great curative. Sure, even in the region's time, they had baths, hadn't they? Cheltenham and all those places. And as he was an up-to-date man and a man in the world, I suppose he thought he was. As the sea water was so near, they hadn't required to go for raw material. So he took it up in barns. He had underneath in the basement, he had an arrangement to heat it so that they could have hot water baths, which are supposed to have wonderful virtue.
There was reference in some old surveys to a corn mill in Cushion Dall. Now, have you ever heard where the earliest corn mill was located in the village?
I couldn't tell whether the one that we're speaking about in Mill Street or the one at the corner. I don't know which
was there.
Which was
there. You mentioned the one at the corner, and that is the site of the present curfew tower.
Exactly.
Which Mr. Francis Turney built.
John
Turney.
Francis was his son.
John Turney came here.
Yes.
Which dog must have been pretty small.
It was small, and it had a reason. A good many people owned their houses, and there was a great sort of leases, and they had no incentive to build. father was of course a doctor, Dr. Herbert Hessen, and his survey of Lensham and the Lensham Crusader says that Crusader was a rubble, a collection of small houses.
The site
of the Corfeeter.
How was that written?
By whatever. Well, we all said it came down from High Street. And I mind a fountain there. We'd only to turn the tap. Okay. And that was long before the water supply. There was no pipes, no nothing. So it must have come.
And you said that
Mill
Street was the
platform
of the...
It got its name from either, I'm not sure which of the two mills. People resented the old name, Mill Street, but supplanted by Main Street.
Yes,
that's
another
story.
The other corn mill, which was in a rather beautiful old world.
Beautiful old world.
Far end of the
beautiful.
Who owned that prison?
That was George Mitchell.
Was the last man to operate that?
Well, I'll tell you, Anthony O'Connor. A miller from a native of Antrim, a great man. And he operated as a corn mill. And then someone suggested, something came there, suggested that it would make an electric. And he adopted that, started off. And then, of course, as you know, the electric people stepped in.
So
Yes, perfectly.
Who built that mill house, the present mill house up there, do you know? Now, I'm not talking about the corn mill, I'm talking about the mill house.
The houses are old, reconditioned. But a John Morton who made some money at sea came and bought the whole thing, because Twernley in his later days was very easily dealt with.
Do you remember anybody else?
I remember the colony of lovely little neat dwelling houses.
The house that you lived in was at one time owned by a man, I understand, called Big Mick McCauley. Yes, I'm interested in this because in a previous recording that I made in Waterford of Jimmy Boney de Largy, he told me that Big Mick McCauley owned a licensed house here in Cushendall. Can you tell us where that licensed house was?
The house that I was used many times were in. It did. And travellers got a meal there.
Well, how did you get into it?
The thing was reconditioned, changed out of all the notion, and for anybody that wanted to take it, we could take it, and we got it.
Yeah.
And Hugh de Largy, who was a very good Hamilton's uncle, told me a tale that it might have nothing to do with the thing. But I know from what an old man told me that Big Mick and his aunt lived there, and she was a girl of extraordinary good looks, a Rachel McCauley. And she used to serve the meals. And Thackeray and his friends speak of a meal that they got.
William McBeast,
there in Irish ghetto. They talk about the beautiful drive to Cushendall, and then they landed in this place where they got a meal. And Hugh de Largy told me he heard it on good authority that Thackeray and his friends noticed her looks. She served them a meal. And on they went north, and when they got the length of Limmenpaddy, suggested to him with a flock of the horses, he wrote a poem called Peggy Limmenpaddy, and it was illustrated and painted afterwards, and it was hanging in some gallery in London under the name of Peggy Limmenpaddy. But it was a lovely girl, Macaulay's features, it was. Remember it? Yes, Richard. And Rachel's in the family yet. Now that's worth recording.
Yes, we have dealt fairly fully with Shore Street, but one thing I would like to ask you, do you remember the courthouse in Shore Street?
It was only to me.
Hearing anything about the courthouse being there?
Oh, by all means, because I can't give you the name of Lord Rushlick alone's biographer, but you'll get the book, no trouble in getting the book.
Yes.
And in it you'll read that was Lord Russell of Killone's first case, and the whole thing is reported verbatim.
And what was he was defending?
Now, I'll tell you how Lord Russell came to the Glens. Lord Russell, I told you it was his first case. There was a family called Mulholland that used to live, that had a lease of Bay Lodge that I told you about. And there was one member of the family called Rosa Mulholland, who became an authoress of sorts. Very lovely sister, engaged to be married to Lord Dursley Killam. He was then a lawyer. Later he became a barrister. He used to come down as holidays, and he got friendly with the people round about. And the whole thing then was about the persecution of certain men in Waterford, who for very good reasons attacked the supers. Now maybe the word super requires some explanation. As a member of the church, Parson Church Missionary Society, whose business was to go about proselytising, and part of the bait they used was soup when the people were hungry. They were known locally as supers. But however, this day, the supers in the main were pretty well, they never created any row, but they forgot their manners and said something about Our Lady and one of her priests, and were attacked in Waterford, but not badly. I think there was dirty water thrown on. But however, the case was brought on, and I needn't go into details for anyone can read it, but Russ made mince meat of the principal witness.
And that case was heard?
That case was definitely. I can't. I don't know if you know Pat McKeegan. I think Pat was about the hotel and his wife. But Pat McKeegan will point out to you, it's built over now. But that's where it was held.
Well, is there a house on the site?
It's on the site. The site, I remember the old days when it was still in the shape of a hall. And of course I asked, was that a hall? Yes, that was the old court house. That was my answer. Yes.
And that's where Pat McKeegan's house now stands?
Yes, in or about.
Just mind for this short story. You go up at the upper end, you have a name which was absolutely beautiful, Magan.
That's.
Now, was that the residence of the Pope?
That was the residence of the Pope. But earlier than that, they were a very old family. And earlier than that, they were in Bridge Street.
Bridge Street.
That's where they first started their business.
What business were they in?
They were very successful butchers.
Butchers?
Yes.
And of course, Dan. His father, was very successful local. Mrs. Patterson was here sharing a bed beside
him. Yes, yes.
Or in a bed beside him. She was going to get her son.
To beg you to get it. Tell you the way it begins. She's Dan's niece.
Yes.
This is how it takes shape. Come with me, my love. He's a guide. His guide is guide to the different ends. The different ends. And he takes in the whole name. And if there's anything historic to be told by this name, he introduces it. But if it depends on sheer beauty, he expands himself. But he treats in the name, and it's well worth reading. And there's some grounds where people think were very well educated in those days. And there's no lapses, like a sort of doggerel verse. It's good.
At the side of that house in Madonna,
yes.
There was some old arch room at the gate.
Yes.
Do you remember hearing that was?
No, but I expect that was part of the old way down from the hotel. Yes. From that hotel it had been in Leicester. There's no doubt about it that there's a hotel there. And even yet you can see the beautiful imposing gateway.
Yes.
Lovely. Hope sometime you'll see it.
There was a little school.
In the bombs?
Over that gate.
Are you speaking down the Shore Street? Or High Street?
You remember that?
I remembered it well, and I remember wondering when I had it meant, and no one could tell. No one could tell.
Now, was that near that gateway?
It was just opposite to his shop door, out on the level of the pavement.
Was that like a mounting stone?
It was possibly about that height.
Yes, but
it was pillar shaped.
2.5 feet.
Yes.
When you were in business down there in Shore Street, I said at the start of this that everybody called with you. I think that any person who has ever written about the glens, and they're fairly numerous, came to check with you about certain details.
It was because I was the oldest resident, and it was a sheer joy to me to talk to them. I do indeed. He has written the most beautiful poetry.
But did he ever comment to you about the poem of any of the Glens poems?
Well, he spoke about Magan.
Did he ever speak to you about that other one, Dusty Rose?
Did
any particular poem of his?
He did. Dusty Roads wrote several books. He wrote one, The Grey Man's Path.
Yeah.
But they were all then described as poems. But I never had the advantage of a course in English. But instinctively, I always picked that poem up in the hay-ups. The poem who told about the raid that Smith at Tiverard with a yeast close behind. I heard a comment, but I think it came through you. Yes, yes, I think it came through you.
The Smith of Tiverah, his name in fact was Robin Kennedy. And were they sprung from this area? Where were they supposed to, their land supposed to be?
It was a family of Kennedys in my memory. They lived at Shorts, but I never could tell what the relationship was between them and Rob Smith. No, I never. There was a connection with Red Bay.
Yeah.
For certain.
The horns, which he meant pipes, that was
at Tiverah. Have you a mental picture of Tiverah in your mind?
Yeah.
You know what John McKinley is?
Yeah.
Well, he had a sweetheart. And I think she was in Cambridge.
Yeah.
People here. And in those days, when the Smiths were doing a job, they had what they called a helper. His business was to do the slaves. And she was a hefty big girl, and she helped him. Their sympathy and their strong arms. But she saw the ewes coming.
By the way, she saw the ewes coming.
No, it was after the battle. It was after the Battle of Antrim. No, God helped them when they were beaten.
Yeah. And what brought the
ewes? The ewes came all round because there was a very strong, there was a very great nationalist feeling in the glens at that time, and a lot of suspects. And they were sent out after the Battle of Antrim. Down the coast to punish, which they did sometimes without law or anything else. And
was it particularly interested in Kennedy?
Certainly, because Kennedy was the one that could never catch. They had made several attempts, you see that in the poem. They made several attempts to catch Kennedy and they never could do it.
The poem's correct, they never did.
The poem's absolutely correct. I needn't weary you with, I needn't weary you with repeating, for you have it. Well, now, personally, what was your opinion?
I wonder, just could we try it again, Mrs. Stone, if you would speak and see just if this records better.
What would I say?
Just say anything at all into your head.
Oh, it's a sort of test?
Yes, yeah.
Well,
no.
It's off the record, I'd put this question to you.
No, turn it, speak into that, please. Come closer to it.
Can I say what I like?
Yeah.
Well, in the evening of the 12th of March, Mr. McCann, the solicitor of Ballymun, Miss Macaulay at one time of Gertie Clee, and myself are sitting in a very pleasant room.
Well, now we'll leave that for the minute of his
time. Yes.
Earlier you had mentioned Sundial House. Can you tell us something about the background of Sundial House, who built it or who lived there?
Not at all. Well, of course, in my days it was never known as Sundial House. As I told you, it was a hospital. But later it was called Sundial House, and I was very anxious to know why. So John McCauley, he was the petty sessions clerk here, and he knew a lot of local histories. I said, John, why was it called Sundial House? Well, he says, the rector at that time was the Reverend Mr. Dunseith, and he was a great mathematician, and he made this sundial, and evidently it was forgotten about. But when I bought it, I was doing some repairs, and I dug out this sundial, put it up, and when I thought of renaming the house, that's the first thing come into my mind.
So,
hence Sundial House.
So John McCauley called it
Sundial House.
Now, that you say that was the rector, the Reverend Dunseith.
He was the rector, yes.
Did you ever hear anything about him?
I did.
What was that?
I did that he encouraged the proselytising, which may not be true.
Yes. Now, that you were saying was the rectory or the manse, whatever it might
be. That was the manse, yes. That was the parsonage.
That's not the location of it now.
No. The present parsonage is, you know, where Lynn's Yes. Garages. Yes. And a few paces up the road on the coast direction, yes, to the right-hand side.
Now, who built that?
That was built by Lord O'Neill.
Lord O'Neill?
The Lord O'Neill of that time.
Of where?
Of Shane's Castle. Who had considerable interest in Cushendun.
Well, can you tell us what interest he had?
I can. He built the house. As far as I'm almost certain that it was he that built the house that's now used as an old man's home.
I see.
Later, Finlay lived in it.
Mm-hmm. That was...
That was Glenmona.
Glenmona. Finlay was the man who was great in the linen trade.
His descendants live here yet, a great fisherman, but he was a big nob in his time.
Yeah.
And owned that. And I think Lord O'Neill built the present, the house that... it's on the shore, I forget its name now. The house where Maura O'Neill wrote her Rockport.
Rockport, yes.
Where Maura O'Neill wrote her poems.
Yes.
And when he was building it, he didn't demolish what's known as the site of Shane's castle.
Yes.
Where Shane was supposed to be.
Where Shane was supposed to be killed.
Yeah, and it's still there for all the world to see.
Yes.
But however to get away from the day. Now, anything
else? Tell me, this man, Lord O'Neill, you say, built this house here, which is now the rectory.
Yes, he built it, we'll say, a summer house.
A summer house?
The children are here, and they've asked questions.
Well, who did he, who lived there?
He put his friend, Miss Butler, into it. Miss Baker.
Baker. Well, was there a Miss Baker lived there?
There's a Miss Baker lived there, and he kept her in very nice order. She had she had a gardener.
A gardener.
And she was other indoor servants.
Yeah.
But this particular gardener was a McNeill of Cushendun.
Oh.
And as so many people had the same name as McNeill, it was absolutely necessary to have a nickname.
Yes.
Some of them complimentary, some of them not.
And what was his?
Well, his name, from the connection,
yeah,
he was known as Baker. And they're known to the present day as the Bakers.
The Bakers.
And that's a connection.
You don't remember Lord O'Neill?
Are you being sarcastic? Amazed enough.
What do you remember hearing?
I remember hearing the tales. You see, my memories are more or less mixed up.
Yes.
I have to. But Lord, the tale was told that there's a woman gathering dulse along the shore. And she heard that Lord O'Neill was coming in his carriage.
Yes, it's been on.
And she didn't know on that heaven how to address him. She knew nothing about protocol.
Yes.
But she thought she'd make a chance. Lord God O'Neill, would you buy a grain of dulse?
Yes.
But to go back.
Well, was he well thought of locally?
Yes, and he built. You'll remember Knocknacarry before the bulldozer got a hold of it.
Knocknacarry
village, a beautiful old world village, and in the one corner of it, you notice lattice windows.
Yes.
And you wondered what brought these into the picture. They're not glens. Those were the houses that Lord O'Neill built for people who worked for him.
Yeah.
And were no longer able to work.
Yeah. Now, when you mention Lord O'Neill, he's not to be confused with Lord Cushendun, who was a MacNeill.
Not at all. Not at all. A much misunderstood man was Ronald McNeill, later Lord Cushendun.
Why do you say that?
I say this because no one will hardly say a good word, and I think it's up to me to say it.
Well, whatever you
Because his politics didn't agree with the rest of the people.
Yeah.
They burnt his house.
They burnt his house?
They burnt his house.
Yes. Was that, is that house there?
That house is Glenmona, which Lord O'Neill built, which was afterwards lived in by the Finlays.
Yeah.
And yeah. I forget who came between that and the old people's home.
Yes.
But it's now known as Glenmona.
And yes. Well, was that house burned?
In the bad times.
Yes. Well, now, tell me... You have to speak up.
Yes, yes.
What else do you know of Lord Cushendun? Did you meet him?
First of all, he belonged to the old Highland stock that came from Barra.
Yeah.
And I understand they came over here as preventive men, or gaugers, or the rest.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I have an idea that they settled first in a house that's now known as Cushendun House, but which is now a rubble because it was burnt accidentally.
Yeah.
And later on, then they lived in Glenmona.
Yes.
And members of the family lived in Cushendun House.
Yes. Yeah.
But he was a big, was a cabinet. He was a great, he was a highbrow to begin with. He was, physically he was a splendid looking man. He was about 6 feet two.
Yeah.
And in addition to being physically perfect almost, he was a great highbrow. Contributed to all these the Athenaeum and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And he was the man who, in Chamberlain's absence, signed the Geneva Pact.
Yeah.
And the government gave him the title of Lord, or whatever title he chose. Well, that man had a choice of 101 beautiful Scottish names, and instead he chose, for sentiment's sake, the rather clumsy title of Lord Cushendun, to my thinking.
Yeah.
Well, Cushendun was a rubble of broken down houses opposite where Arthur McAllister's store is at the present time. He got an architect from London to design a terrace there. Oh, so that it wouldn't make a fool of the rest of the village. Because the housing was very bad at that time. And in due time, tenants came to live there, and the village took on a new appearance without spoiling it. Then when his first wife died, he built other houses facing the sea and called them after his beloved wife, Maud.
Maud.
Now,
where was she buried?
She was a Cornish woman.
Where was she buried?
I'll tell you this. I'm long-winded. She was a Cornish woman. And from the moment she made acquaintance with the Glens people, she recognised something akin in them, and she was an angel of goodness. And in course of time she died. And she hadn't Christian belief. She was a Christian scientist. And she asked to be buried in the grounds of her own house in Glenmona. But her people didn't like the idea. They thought it savoured of not having sufficient faith. And all they had to do was, in the neighbouring churchyard, they got permission from the Church of Ireland bishop, and they broke down a small grassy wall, and there she was buried.
Yes.
Now this is a personal experience I had.
Yes.
On the day of her burial, I happened to be in Cushendall, and I followed the crowd, and the crowd was made up of two sections. All the people that knew her and had cause to love her.
Yes.
And all the grandees, the whole Parliament was represented with tall hats and all that. The grass was covered with tall hats. And in the grave as pallbearers, and among the grandees was a little man, as dignified as the rest. And he was there by invitation because he was the only member of his kin. And that was Malcolm McNeill of Glendon. Well, when all was over, the last sod was put on Mrs. McNeill. And Lord Cushendun, visibly affected, with the tears running down his cheeks, thanked the people for coming.
Did he stop?
In a lovely speech, he stood on the grave side. Mm. And I don't know what words came before, because the crowd was surging and I wasn't quite near. But the last words I caught were, "Who loved the Glens and its people?"
Yes.
Now that...
That's your personal memory.
That's my primary, the memory of this giant of a man.
Yes.
And a very short time after that, I revisited this grave and I saw a Cornish cross that was brought from her native Cornwall.
Yes.
And that those words were inscribed on it.
Yes.
No.
Can you tell me whose father, or what was the Lord Cushendun's father?
He was Long Eddie.
Yes.
He was also a man of extraordinary height.
Yes.
Like his son and his other son.
Well, you have spoken highly of his son. Can you speak of the same way of this, of the grandfather, of the son's father?
I'm speaking now, when I used that bad language, I thought it was the only thing suitable to use in connection with Long Eddie, for he was a wreck renter. He was the father of Lord Cushendun.
Yes. And what was that you said about them when you were...
Something I'm sorry for.
Well...
Well,
where did Long Eddie live?
Long Eddie lived in Glenmona.
In Glenmona,
yes. And he had a brother who was an officer in the Navy called Captain Dan.
Yes.
He's buried in Lead.
Yes.
And Captain Dan was altogether different.
Yes.
A kindly man of easy morals, but yes, very kind and good.
Yes.
Now,
well, when you say a kindly man, was Long Eddie not a kindly man?
He was a devil's imp.
Yes. Where did he... you say he was a devil's imp. Do you remember any particular stories about him?
Oh, heavens above. There was no necessity for a particular... There was no necessity for a particular story because he was known so well that it was taken for granted that he was a man without heart.
Yeah.
But his son certainly made it up.
Yeah.
Now,
well, when you say he was a rack renter, did he evict any families?
Yes, several cases.
And were those over the Lade side or?
There was a McNeil, but I can't place him. But I think it went farther back than that, and there's a story told about him which I cannot vouch for. But his idea was to put the native small farmers out of Lade and plant a non-Catholic stock. And the story goes, but I'll not swear, but it could easily be verified, that after a heavy day's work he came home, and of course, as people will that are fond of their animals, he went to see to the horses once, and he didn't take the breath of the horse. And he went to a well quite near, and he didn't dismount, and he got entangled somewhere or another in the harness, and he was drowned. Now, you can verify that.
Yeah. But there's some suggestion that before he died, he had said something, the last words...
Yeah, he said, thank God the last papers was out of Lade.
Out of Lade.
And I think this too, because I remember Lade's one time was largely owned by the McNeese, and they were possibly his kin.
Yes.
Yes. Well, now, when we're talking on that, the last time I was in Christendom, I went to the house that's supposed to be the place, the first place, built a house there. And it wasn't an ambitious one. And I'll tell you the situation, 2 or 3 minutes. It was burnt down accidentally. And it said that some descendant of Lord Christendom has a sentiment about the place and that he's coming back to build a house there.
Yes.
Well, did you ever go down to Christendom?
Yes.
Well, I tell you who finished the story. Mrs. McBride of the hotel.
Yes. Well, now tell me, when you go up Lade from Cushendall here,
yes.
After you go up above Monavart,
yes.
There's a ruin of a tower.
That.
Who built that or what is it?
Well, for a long, long time, we couldn't find out what that tower meant. And Frank McCauley, who's greatly interested, by the way, he goes to all the lectures.
Yes.
And Frank thought he would ask Miss Ada McNeil when he met her at a Gaelic meeting or something. And she told him that the first McNeil built that he had charge of there was a good deal of illicit business going on around. You see, the caves around there lent themselves to that sort of thing.
Smuggling.
Yeah, to smuggling in one thing or another. And that the first McNeil that came here built that.
Yes. What was the purpose of it?
The purpose was to prevent smuggling. And
was it a watchtower?
It was.
I see.
And later, of course, that tower... Do you know the farm where Pat Kenny lives in?
Yes.
Well, it supplanted that. It was known as... Oh, I forget the name now. But it had a splendid outlook on the sea.
And was that where the Coast Guards took up?
The Coast Guards lived there until they built the permanent place outside the Coast Road.
Out the Coast Road, yes.
You mentioned Long Eddie's physique. Did you ever know any man who could match him in physique?
Well, I don't know because it happened long before my time, Mr. Meehan. But I know that the Mr. Gillis, who was not a native of this place, he came to this place and married a widow, a Mrs. McCambridge. That's another story.
Yeah.
And he didn't see eye to eye. It was the time of the Land League, I heard.
Yeah.
But he met a man, he was friendly with the people, and he met a man, and this man was in great distress, and he told him he hadn't all the rent. But Mr. Gillis was reported to have said to him, what does it matter? Give him the half of it. And sure, when you're able to do it, you can give him the other half. Also say, you don't know Long Eddie. Well, I'll go with you. And he waited in the sentence hall. And I suppose the rent was being lifted up. But the next thing was a heck of a commotion on the stairs. And the 2 6-footers at it, hot foot.
The Reverend Gillis.
The Reverend Gillis and the Laird of the Manor.
And the Laird of the Manor, yes.
And after that, His interest turned in the direction of the landlegs.
Agilis, he started a church of his own.
He came here. Some people say he came from Donegal. I don't know. But they came here as a workman. Now, I want this verified. But however, there was a very influential family. There were two families, the Stuarts and the McCambridges. And there was marriageable ladies in the McCambridge household.
Yes.
And one was a widow.
And we're talking about Gillis.
You're talking about Gillis. And he went away to study. He was a clever man. I think it was more native talent than any education he got. And he came back. He was made a Presbyterian minister. But he ran that, and ultimately it was closed up, as you know.
Is that down at Castle Green?
That's at Castle Green. That's the farm now occupied by Willie Blaney.
That's right.
Yes.
And did he minister there to the people?
Yes, of course he did. Because up till that time, there was no Presbyterian church in Cushendore.
Yes.
This one that you passed on your way to the hospital was built after that.
Yes.
Because the one in Cushendore had to be closed for lack of
funds.
Parish innocent funds, actually.
Yes, I see.
Yes.
Well, did Gillis die here?
He did.
Yes.
He did.
You say
and had a family.
You say he took an interest in the land league.
He did, because he saw what happened. He saw the way the man rated the poor man that hadn't his full rent.
Well, did
and he resented the treatment he got and overheard the fight.
Yes. Well, so did he maintain his interest in the land league till his death?
He did. I don't know to his death, but I know that he began to see the side of the land league, their side of the question.
Yes. His family, are there any of them still here?
I don't guess. His grandson lives and works in Larne.
Yes.
And he sold his interest in the place to Willie Blaney, who holds it at the present time.
Would that have been Stuart Gillis?
Yes.
Now, you mentioned there in passing the McCambridges. Did you say that Gillis married a McCambridge?
He married a widow McCambridge.
A widow.
I wonder, just could we try it again, Mrs. Stone, if you would speak and see just if this records better.
What would I say?
Just anything at all.
Oh, it's a sort of test?
Yes, yeah.
Well, and it's off the record, I'd put this question to you.
No, turn it, speak into that. Come closer to it.
Can I say what I like?
Yeah.
Well, in the evening of the 12th of March, Mr. McCann, the solicitor of Ballymena, Miss McCauley at one time of Gartic Lee, and myself are sitting in a very pleasant room.
Well, now we'll leave that for the minute.
Yes.
Earlier you had mentioned Sundial House. Can you tell us something about the background of Sundial House, who built it or who lived there?
Not at all. Well, of course, in my days it was never known as Sundial House. As I told you, it was a hospital. But later it was called Sundial House, and I was very anxious to know why. So John McCauley, he was the petty sessions clerk, and he knew a lot of local histories. I said, John, why was it called Sundial House? Well, he says, there was the rector at that time was the Reverend Mr. Dunseith, and he was a great mathematician, and he made the sundial, and evidently